When troubles come our way, is it a good idea to try and find out the reasons why we are in trouble? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host, for commentary and discussion applying God's Word to issues of daily living. Assisting me in our program today are Dave Thomas and Larry Vavirka, two colleagues from the School of Theology. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Alden.
Thank you.
Let's start with that question that I raised. Is it possible, is it worthwhile, when something ghastly happens, to try to determine the reason for it? What do you think?
I think it's a good thing to try and do, long as you recognize that there may be a number of instances where you cannot find an answer. But I think it's a good thing to do because sometimes the trouble and suffering we have caused ourselves by some bad behavior or bad decision. And so to find out the cause of that would open the door to a remedy. But I think it's a big struggle when people think they can find a reason to explain everything that happens to them.
Larry, comment?
I think there's a natural human tendency to be subjective whenever going through difficult experiences. And one asks the question, what have I done to cause this, or what have I done to deserve this? I think that is almost a predictable reaction that happens with a lot of us. On the other hand, I'm very troubled by people who immediately try to assume or place the blame or cause out there outside themselves as a sort of general reaction to whatever difficulty comes. It doesn't cross their minds to think of any personal responsibility in difficulties. I really do like the idea of using life's challenges as opportunities to do careful reflection and to ask the hard questions about, or at least looking for some cause to this effect and doing reflective thinking.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, what about the people who, when trouble comes, they get into self-flagellation, that they ascribe the responsibility to themselves, even though it shouldn't really be put there?
Well, and I think those are both extremes. In other words, always projecting it out there beyond oneself, or taking the subjective response and assuming that I've done something to cause this, and therefore I ought to be punishing myself, or so depressed that I rail on myself to the point of immobilization or being ineffective in response to whatever it is.
Larry, it seems to me that I've heard somewhere that many children, when their parents go through a divorce, are inclined to take the responsibility on themselves.
That's very true. But again, that's that sort of immediate subjective tendency to ask the question, what have I done to have caused this? Or if I had done this, or if I'd done that, maybe this wouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm inclined to think that even if it has no relationship to anything evil that we've done, it seems to me very helpful to simply take our situation and say, what can I learn from it?
Well, very true.
And I don't have to put any particular blame anywhere, but just simply say, I'm in this mess.
Right.
What can I learn and how can I grow from that?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, let me press another question. I'm not sure I have a good answer to this, but in 1 Peter 4, he talks about sharing in the sufferings of Christ. What does he mean by that? What would it mean for us to share in the sufferings of Christ? What purpose would that serve? Are we witnessing for him? Does it have to do with character development? What does it mean to share in the sufferings of Christ?
I used to preach a sermon once upon a time called The Fourth Cross. Jesus extends the invitation to us to take up our cross and follow him. And I explore the meaning of that, our cross. What is our cross? A lot of people have looked at the cross as some sort of impairment or difficulty or children who are not in the church or something of that nature, that it's a burden, a terrible burden for them to bear. My sense of the fourth cross is to identify with Jesus caring about people and about life, and to give our lives sacrificially in caring and loving other people, and that becomes our burden. That's the thing that we carry. It's people that we care. It's people who we carry in our hearts, and that's the fourth cross.
Yeah, I think another possible meaning of this would be that when you try to live a righteous and godly life in a planet that's overcome by evil, there's consequential suffering. And it seems to me that may be one of the possibilities that are going here, and that if you are amongst those who believe and try to live as Christ lived, and you encounter suffering because of that, you are sharing in his sufferings.
I think one of the things that I am uneasy about is when people are aware that they are suffering with Christ and take on kind of a sanctimonious attitude. You know, I'm one of God's children, so it's just my calling to suffer. You know, there's something I find rather repulsive about that. And I would like for Christians to avoid that, because I don't think that's the way Jesus suffered.
That is one coping style, though.
What is it? Now, let's move on to another passage in Peter again, 1 Peter chapter 5, where he talks about the devil prowling about the earth looking for someone to devour. Now, I'm wondering, that devouring, normally we tend to think of the devil dealing with temptations, although he could simply be wrecking havoc like he did with Job and so on. What do you think the primary focus of this passage is in 1 Peter 5:18, when the devil is going around? Is he just trying to make trouble for us? Is he trying to simply lead us astray by putting temptations? There's probably the difference between lustful temptations, where we are led to do things that are intriguing and exciting but destructive, as over against the temptations for self-destruction when we get into difficult times. Give me some help on interpreting that perspective of the devil.
Well, one of the things that I find so annoying about Satan's program is that it's not so much about us that as it is about his issues with God. And Satan's avowed program or purpose is to discredit God, is to take everything that God has done, everything that God offers, and to distort it, and to leave the message with us and with the onlooking universe that God is a lousy creator, a lousy ruler, and that every havoc thing that he can do is an attempt to make God look bad. Whether it's in the area of our personal responses to his gracious offer of salvation, or whether it's the way he has structured his universe based on the principle of love. He is out to do havoc with God. And we then become merely pawns in this in this whole thing. And that really is annoying to me.
If we try to look at the situation, then what you're suggesting, Larry, is that he doesn't care so much about us, except as it reflects on God's situation.
Or I would add, making life miserable for us because God loves us creates distress for God, if I can put it in those terms. And so, you know, by troubling us, he creates a burden in the life of God. And if if his issues with God, we become a mechanism by which he can make difficulties.
Now, I'd like for us to turn the next direction, where we talk about, well, there's a couple of passages here that our lesson brings up. One is Romans 1, 21 to 32, a fairly pointed passage about the results of a sinful life. And it would be a further amplification of what the Old Testament would include under the phrase, your blood be upon your own head. What and how should we deal with an issue when we see people who have brought problems upon themselves by their inappropriate behavior? Maybe we ought to ask the question, first of all, does that ever happen where people are oblivious to what they're doing? That may be one side, but I'm also interested when people know perfectly well that they're doing hurtful things. What is our responsibility as Christians? Is there any way of helping people like that?
And, you know, if I may jump here and just twist that question a little bit, nuance it a little bit, Alden, it is an amazing thing how much of human suffering is caused by the misbehavior of human beings. If you look at the globe, that a lot of famine is caused because of people's inhumanity to each other. A lot of the suffering that human beings have is because they suffer at the hands of their fellow human beings. And I think that one of the things we need to do is try in a very kind and gentle and persistent way to get people to understand the great power of their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I can make decisions today that can have a profound impact and cause suffering on a number of other people. And the more powerful I become, the more capacity I have to inflict that kind of suffering. And so if I am causing it, if you are causing it, it takes some courage on my part to sit down with you and find a way and say, Alden, you know, have you ever thought, have you looked at this? And you know, there are a few instances like that, in the Bible, where people confronted the king and said, you got to face this here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, life doesn't go well usually for the messenger in a case like that. But
of course, in our world, we're usually most horrified on the surface with violent crimes where you have a one-on-one situation. But I think it was C.S. Lewis, I picked this up from an email the other day, C.S. Lewis said the most catastrophic sins are those that involve gentlemanly people sitting around a table, taking votes without anger, which have enormous implications. I mean, white-collar crime can really just be catastrophic.
Yeah.
One last question here before time runs out. Paul's thorn in the flesh. He says that whatever it was given him to keep him from being elated. What does that mean in terms of God's purpose? Does he plant little time bombs here and there to keep us in line?
No, I don't think so. We have varying degrees of self-confidence and ability, and I think that sometimes for somebody who is very capable and very self-confident, life can be more difficult. In other words, it's easier to make life go by your terms, which is not always a good thing. Mm-hmm. And to have some kind of affliction is one of the things that can keep a person, keep a sense of their own frailty alive in their minds. And I wonder if that isn't what the case with the Apostle Paul was.
Yeah. And my guess is the distinction, the line between self-confidence, which we all appreciate, and arrogance, which we all despise, is not always an easy one. And very confident people have problems with that. Thank you, Dave and Larry, for your help today. And thank you also to John Campbell, our program engineer, and for all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.